Well, let me just start by saying thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for letting me be here.
So this story, you've written a book, so it's a long story, but I want to just say the short version of it is that your mother was committed to a nursing home by an abusive husband, your father, and this documents essentially your struggle to represent her, get her out of that situation, bring her to live with you here in Colorado. Is that basically what has happened?
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what's the takeaway here? You call it a cautionary tale. In what sense?
In the sense that the system has set up guardianships of themselves. Take away your rights. They shouldn't. The law doesn't read that way. You're supposed to only help the person as much as they need, but usually people take total control.
So did your father then have guardianship over your mother, and that's what started this whole thing?
The whole thing started. I ended up with power of attorney, but I went back on Mother's Day in 2009, called my dad and asked if he wanted to go out to Mother's Day brunch, which is also my birthday. He showed up at the nursing home, said he would go. And he didn't show up, and the next day I went in, and they told me I couldn't see her anymore. But I had a power of attorney with me. She signed it. I tried to take her out, and I was confronted by seven police officers with seven guns. And they had them holstered, but it was a little scary. Got her in the car. They said, come back tomorrow with it notarized. We'll let you take her. And by that time, they said there was a guardianship in the pipeline, even though a judge hadn't seen anything, which is against the Constitution. And subsequently, in the following, that was May of 2009, June, she was beaten, or she was sexually assaulted, never was reported, the nursing home didn't report, physically beaten.
In the nursing home.
In the nursing home in July 4th, actually, of 2009, with the guardian ad litem and public officials being aware of it, never reported, not reported to the police until my mother called her sister and said she'd been beaten. And we had a welfare check done, and the nursing home was cited for failure to protect and failure to report. 2 weeks later, she ended up escaping. She was transferred. They were tired of dealing with our family. They transferred to another nursing home. But nursing homes are not very good places in general, and I've been in a lot of them in the last 4 years.
So let me just back up a second. So your father's guardianship superseded your power of attorney?
It shouldn't have, because the guardianship, actually, I had the power of attorney on the 12th. The guardianship was not seen by the judge until the 14th. It's just how things work back there. You know, someone called the police and said, no, they were going to file a guardianship. Well, if it's not filed, it's not official. So there was a lot of rights violations all the way through it.
So you get involved, and your goal is to get Mom out of this place. And tell me how you went about doing that.
Well, she got transferred to another place because they were tired of dealing with the family. My father hadn't put the noose around where she couldn't call anybody. She called my brother's barber shop and said, talk to her hairdresser there and said, come get me. I want to go do my laundry. They had ruled this woman homicidal, suicidal, dementia, Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, and alcoholism. She couldn't communicate. That's what they were saying. And she knew very much what she wanted out. And they went out to do laundry, got in my brother's car, and she goes, I want to go to Colorado. He goes, when? She goes, right now. And he drove her out. When she arrived, she was still, you could see the beating, the big knot on her forehead, black eye, and she was 2 pints short of blood. She was on her way to death.
And she came out to Colorado to your house?
To my house. She landed out here. We had the FBI, the state police, and many states trying to track us down. I got her to Protective Services, up to response with Peg McGaverick. The county was very kind and said they would do everything not to have her taken back.
Pitkin County.
Pitkin County.
So the FBI and the police were looking for her because what? They thought you had kidnapped her?
They thought we had kidnapped. But my dad's attorney, who in my book is the villain, tried to have kidnapping charges brought, and the state's attorney back there refused. He didn't do a lot of other things he should have done, but he refused to have kidnapping charges, and subsequently I ended up being guardian of person. My father stayed guardian of estate. And as guardian of person, it was my responsibility to report to the court once a year on her health, her condition, and how I'm taking care of her, And my father was to take care of the estate, which was fairly small, $100,000, her house, as if it was his own. We finally get the house back. My father died in June of this year. We were not told by the courts until late July. And they handed me a house back that was upside down. And my mother is deeply indebted right now. And I mean, she won't have to do anything about it, but she can't go back home. And her dream was to go back home and die with the children that took care of her. I hadn't had much communication in 28 years with my mother until this. And I've grown to love her. I didn't like her at first, but I've grown to love her.
So fast forward. She's with you now. You're caring for her. Turns out she has Alzheimer's.
We're still not sure. Or is it dementia?
We're not sure on either.
Those words, actually, I call it cognitive decline. There's no cure for it. I find with Big Pharma and the pills that it's rather a scam. There's, you know, it may work, and they have pills out there that may work in 17% of the population that allegedly have it, and they really don't know. It's big money.
But she's, well, describe her condition.
At this point, she is in home care and hospice right now. So she is definitely on her way to the other side. But up until then, when I got her, I haven't had television in 8 years. So she decided to play piano. We did that for about 3 weeks. She took lessons from Chris Phillips, and she got bored with that. She played piano all her life, and she'd always been an artist. But she worked in ceramics, and then she became proficient at that in stained glass, self-taught. And I decided to turn around and get her canvases. And that's how it all started, was basically to keep her busy while I was doing my clients in my little salon that connected to my house.
So you give her these canvases, and voila, she is a painter. And you did not know this, right?
I, as far as I know, I've never seen her paint before. I mean, she's painted on ceramics. I'm sure she's drawn out and laid out the stained glass, but I don't know that she ever had a paintbrush or acrylics in her hand before.
Now, as far as communicating, as you and I are here, she doesn't do much of that. Am I correct?
Not anymore. She broke her hip on my watch and went into medical delirium, and she got fairly quiet. It's another issue that I write about in the book, how elders don't handle painkillers very well. It's a very common thing. But she turned around, and she speaks through her work. Her work speaks
volumes. I was just
going
to say, so the communication then is this artwork. Yeah. She's got, what, 300 paintings to date?
It's close to 300. It used to take her about 2.5-3 days to do a painting. When Dasha came down to do her curating, which I discovered is an art, she picked out 125 of the paintings out of the close to 300, of which maybe 25 will be in the show. I don't remember seeing a lot of them. I was just keeping her busy. I'd put them there. I may have put them on top of the refrigerator to dry, and she'd start her next one. And I didn't always look at them very close. I knew I liked what she did. I didn't know that it was remarkable as other people are starting to say now.
Well, one of the remarkable things that I've heard about these paintings, and I've only seen prints of them, I haven't seen them in person, but is that a lot of people will paint something in one perspective. So if you're going to paint a figure, you put it in front of you and you paint the figure. She is seated in a bed with the canvas on essentially a turntable, and she's painting these figures with a 360-degree perspective.
It's bizarre, but she actually she sits at the kitchen counter with her in her wheelchair. But she does. She turns the paintings so she can reach them. We have about 10 that she did on an easel that was outside, but she got to where it was too cold outside for her anymore. So that's what she does. It's 360 degrees,
and apparently that right there is special.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre to watch her. I mean, the other day, I said she's not doing well now, but she had picked up two paintbrushes for the first time in one hand. I've heard of people painting with a brush in each hand, but two in one hand, and she was painting the other day. It's a pretty amazing process, and I've had other art friends. Gard Moses is a good friend who's a fine artist and graphic artist, and he kept looking at her work, and he likes realism, and all of a sudden he's going, And he was there when Dasha did the curating, and he even went, You know, it's pretty amazing. And their colors are bright, and it's a lot of fun.
So what does that say to you?
Oh, it surprises me. It makes me happy. It's something that she didn't do it for profit. She didn't do it for fame. She did her artwork for herself. And I think she still enjoys doing it. We'll see.
So how do you, after what you've gone through and what she's gone through, when you're just sitting there in the living room with her, I mean, what is it just a big sigh of relief that you are both sitting in your home here in Colorado?
After seeing her in the nursing home back in 2009, and I'd have flashbacks to Cuckoo's Nest, she kept claiming she was in the snake pit. Until I got her out here to a doctor, Jaffrey, he turned around and I said, well, Mom keeps saying she's in the snake pit. And he goes, oh, the snake pit. That's a movie with Olivia de Havilland that she was put into a psychiatric hospital against her will, and hence the title of my book. She knew exactly what she was talking about. So, but seeing her, I'm starting to write my next book. It's going to be Winifred, Do You See the Rabbits in the Clouds? And yeah, it's I got a little foreword where I say I've tried not to laugh, but I do. I've tried not to cry, but I have. And I've tried not, I tried not to love, but I've learned.
You said a little earlier that at one point you weren't that close to your mom, but now you are.
28 years, I'd see him once for 24 hours once a year. When I blew into town, take him out to dinner, make sure my house was okay, because actually the house that she ended up with, my parents had forged my signature. It's a long story, but we won't go quite into that. But yeah, they weren't very nice to me.
Yeah. But you've forgiven her? Or what was that process? What do you call that?
She's a different person now. She's old. She's feeble. Harmless. She has a lot of love in her. And I think I realized after my relationship and the way I was raised that she could have very well had Stockholm Syndrome for this whole time, the victim also.
Well, let's talk about your dad a little bit. He died, you say, in June of this year. What was that like?
For me?
Yeah.
I didn't really think about it much. I was disappointed that the other family members hid it from my mother. I would have taken her back for the funeral. I had no qualms about that. But it's been a game, and it's a game they've played. They pretty much wiped the house out from the time he died, June 22nd, till I found out July 27th, of Mom's jewelry. It was like probate court. And she ends up, this whole thing has been done in probate court, and guardianship people turn around and say, why am I in probate? I'm not dead. But all of her stuff under the color of law has been removed by other people.
I guess what I meant, too, though, is, I mean, it sounds like your father wasn't a very nice man. In fact, you called him evil at one point in your book. And so I just wondered, when he passed, did all those memories come back up? I mean, what did you go through?
Me, for emotionally, I was just, good for him. I hope he makes his peace with his maker. You know, as far as him, we just did not have a good relationship. You know, I did a lot of things for them over the years, and never want anything back except for them to be up front, and he just wasn't. He just wasn't a good person.
So is that really what started this whole thing?
As far as?
Your mom's situation and how you wound up being the caregiver now was his?
He was a hoarder, so he compartmentalized my mother by putting her away. You know, he treated her as if she was property, and that's how he's done his whole life. So it was an easy jump. I didn't think I'd have my mother this long. I always thought she would go back. But my book goes through how the court systems work, how the public guardians don't do their jobs, how there's a lot of money exchanges hands from the nursing homes to donations or campaign contributions to judges, lawyers, and their districts come campaign time. And it's a circle. And there's kickbacks to to nursing homes from Big Pharma to use Risperidol, Seroquel, Johnson & Johnson. And Omnicare were fined $2 billion for this scam, I think in Illinois. And at the same time, they made $22 billion in the same time period. It's good business.
Yeah.
It's something that baby boomers face. My book is about what's going to happen to us.
That's what
if you're a baby boomer, I'm not.
In fact, I was born 2 years after you, so okay. Yeah. And my mom's 86. Yes, I'm a kid. My mom's 86. Lives by herself. So
is she doing well?
She is doing well. Yes,
very good.
She broke her hip last year, but she's up and around. and she's doing well. I was going to say the other side of cautionary tale is that this is going to happen to a lot of people.
There's about 70 to 80 million baby boomers facing this, and we are not ready. And that's what the book is really about. You know, it is my saga, my story. I tried to put it out there as something readable instead of a manual. And I've never written before. My grandfather was a writer, though.
Mm-hmm. And so the caution is what? That we should get ourselves educated.
We need to stand up and act now. You know, it's going to be 10 years now, it's going to be too late.
And what would you change? What would the first thing you would go after be? For baby boomers, if there was something that could be changed.
Nursing homes are a fairly new phenomena from my mom's generation. They put her parents in, but my grandparents didn't put their parents in. Our society has become a throwaway society. We need to set up our nursing homes better. If we're going to have them, they need to be staffed properly. It's maximum profit, minimum care. They underpay the CNAs. They're transitional employees. The nurses are usually ones that can't get jobs other places in the cities. Out here, it's probably different. But out here is different.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of changes that way that need to be made. We've got to look at alternative living, you know, this communal living. I don't know. I've looked at monolithic domes. They have an R57 factor. A lot of the cost of Medicaid, Medicare goes to pay for the heating of these buildings. There's just a whole cloud of things that need to start happening. Otherwise, it's going to be, they call it senicide. It hasn't happened since the 30s when they used to put the Indians out in the woods. If you made it back, we'd take care of you. Or they put the Eskimos in on the ice floe, but it's myth, but it did happen back. I think the last case was in the 30s, but we're going to have senicide in this country, and it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah. And while this is a horrible story for your mother, it was a burden on you and your brothers, too, correct?
Mostly on me. My brother brought her out, and pretty much she hasn't had to do a whole lot because we couldn't get her back there. My next book is going to be about caregiving. That's part. One of my chapters is Confessions of a Caregiver.
Changed your life?
Totally. Upside down. I used to live large.
Define that.
Oh, I probably make a fifth of the income I was making 5 years ago.
Is that because you're spending it on mother?
I spend it on care for my mother. It's and where I work out of my house is not optimum. And you lose clients through transition. But it's a lot of work. But it's the hardest job I've ever loved. Physically, it takes its toll. I've put on 40 pounds. I don't fit in my Armani suit anymore.
You look good in the shorts, though.
It's a little cold out there.
So, I mean, there's a toll on the caregivers.
There's definitely a toll on the caregivers. You can't. I've been doing it alone. There is a girl who just came back, Deb Kabishka. We're childhood friends. She came out 2.5 years ago, and she's called Divine Intervention in my book, and our parents were best friends. Our mothers were best friends, actually. And she just came back yesterday, and she's here for 4 weeks for the show. And to see Mom out. I think Mom's a short-timer at this point. I hope she makes her show. But
that much of a short-timer? Day-to-day?
Month-to-month.
The show is next week.
Yeah, it's the 8th. Less than 2 weeks away.
Yeah. Talk about the show.
I have no idea. It's overwhelming. I mean, the people, Richard Carter came up to me at his opening and told me my mother had a show. I had no idea. I'd walked in and dropped a book off to Dasha and showed her one of the paintings. And they didn't tell me. I found it at another art show. He came up because he's on the board. And he thought her work was genius. He looks at it and it's overwhelming. It's going to be interesting. They have usually 175 to 200 people at any given time. In my work up here, I had 450 clients of my own, which was about 10% of the population. So I'll be handing out a lot of invitations. So we'll see if we can make it real big.
Now, assuming that it goes well, this would assist you in the care of your mother, right?
Yeah, it'll help a lot there, but more so after this is all said and done and she passes on, I've become an advocate. I love doing hair, but I'm going to be on the road traveling. I'm with the other book, Wither Art, and making a lot of noise that the politicians aren't going to like.
Any friends in the government on this issue?
Do I have any friends? Yeah. I've gotten it to some people. Sherry Busto, who's the congresswoman of Rockford, her staff is reading it. They're reviewing it. She lives, or she, her office in Rockford is right where all the miscreants in my book are, within rock's throw from her, including the newspaper that was threatened. So she's got an interest in it. And I've sent it to President Obama 3 times. I haven't got the complimentary thank you letter even back from him for writing the White House. I do have connections up there, and I will try to use them as best I can. But I will be heard.
John, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you. Enjoyed being here.